Everybody, welcome to this edition of Coffee Time. This is episode number 109, I believe. Lost track, but hey, I think it's 109. Again, brought to you by Podcast One and their sponsors of BetOnline.net. You got MMA coming up, which go figure. I got a former MMA fighter, Dennis Hallman, on. Thank you for joining. But we got to go on to that. If you're getting your bets on, use the promotion Podcast One for your 50% off. If you're into that betting, I'm not personally, but it's, hey, I've heard people win from it. It's a good website. You got NFL going strong. You've got NHL, NBA right now. I mean, if you're better, take the risk. Go ahead. But use your promotion Podcast One for your 50% off at betonline.net. But back to the guest. Thank you for joining me tonight. And yeah, how are you tonight?
I'm doing good.
Thank you again. Thank you again.
Happy to be here.
Sorry about Saturday. Just miscommunication. But hey, we got it. So that's the main thing. So let's get started. I want to ask you, how'd you get your name, nickname Superman? Who gave you that, and what brought that upon?
The Superman was from a local promoter, Eric Wiseman, because when I was an amateur, I used to wear a Superman sweater, like a Lucky sweater, and he didn't remember my name, so he just put me on his poster and wrote Superman, and it kind of just stuck from there.
Now, I see you're a second degree black belt in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. Now, what got you ultimately wanting to do mixed martial arts or martial arts? Was it you watching, like me, UFC and back in the day? What got you wanting to do mixed martial arts?
I saw like the UFCs back then, but they weren't there. I mean, they were like one every couple months, but there was a local kid that was trying to train for Extreme Battlecade, and he was making videotapes of himself fighting people, and I had recently won the state wrestling championships, and so he wanted to fight a wrestler on tape. So he had one of his friends call me and ask me if I wanted to fight Bobby Jacobson, and I said, why? And he said, just because he wants to fight you. And I was like, okay, sounds good to me. And then when I went there, his coach told me what it was about. And so I fought him and choked him out. And he told me that I'd be good if I started training with him. And 3 weeks later, I had my first fight.
There you go. Couldn't have said better. So you were a part of a team named Victory Athletics. Tell us about that. Are there any big name fighters besides you that came out of that team? And is that team still going today?
Yep. Victory Athletics. Misha Tate lived in my backyard for 2 years. She trained there in the beginning of her career. Lynn Bentley, Brad Blackburn, Benji Raddick. Who else? John Albert, Sterling Ford, I think those are the UFC and Spec Force guys. I mean, Corey DeVella.
Now I see you are one of the very few that actually did three different weight classes, middleweight, welterweight, and lightweight. Now tell us about that, and how hard was it to make those cuts for those weights? Because that's like a 20-pound difference between the two. Between the three, sorry.
I think it's 30 pounds, actually.
30 pounds, yeah.
Yeah, it was difficult. I should have stuck at 55 early in my career, but they didn't have any 55 fights really. 170 was the lightest weight class when I started fighting for the UFC. So I had to put on weight for that. And then as I got older, I just started putting on more weight. So I kind of, for 185, I didn't have to cut any weight. And that was kind of why I fought that weight, because the opening was there. But, 155, I mean, I cut the time I missed weight and beat up John McDessie. I lost 36 pounds in one day. That was pretty tough. It was I still miss weight, but it was tough. I took off 36 pounds. So that's never easy.
Now, I see ultimately you retired in 2015, but honestly, if the money was right and if you were approached to do a fight again, would you do it?
Yeah, if the money was right, sure. You know? I haven't really trained to fight in a few years. You know, it's a big ordeal. Like, if you're actually training to fight, you know, it's a lot different than just casually training.
Would there be one that you would want to take on? Any opponent that you would like to get back at or have at?
Not really. I mean, I don't really have any animosity towards anybody. I just you know, my career happened the way it happened. So, I mean, I'd fight anybody, really. But if money is right, I'd fight anybody out there.
So, I didn't know this until, tell me if this is true from what I'm seeing. You're the only one besides GSP to beat Matt Hughes twice?
I think I'm the only one to beat him twice without losing to him.
That's insane. And Matt Hughes is a legend in his own right. I'm a longtime champion before GSP. That's something.
Yeah, I was his first and his second loss. We just have different style matchups, you know? Like, he was used to being stronger than everybody, and he wasn't stronger than me. And he just is a slow starter that keeps going. And, you know, the longer he goes, the harder he gets to fight. And I'm a fast starter that, you know, I can catch you if you make a mistake real soon. And kind of like my style versus his style was a bad matchup for him.
Now, you, besides the UFC, you were in Strikeforce, IFL, World Series of Fighting, Titan FC, Shooto, and King of the Cage. That's a lot of different promotions. Can you tell me if there any difference? What you liked about them? Tell us about those promotions.
Titan FC was the guy was kind of shady. The guy who owned it, I think he owed a lot of people some money. Mm-hmm. And that wasn't a very good experience. But Shooto was fantastic. UFC obviously was good. Strikeforce was fantastic. I had a good experience with most of the promotions. There wasn't very many that I had bad experience with. So they were all pretty handily. But, you know, obviously UFC was the premier. Strikeforce was right there, though, whenever I fought for them. You really wouldn't be able to tell any difference between the two.
Now, back to the Matt Hughes fights. Tell us about both of them. How were you able to defeat him, and what was so tough about those fights going in?
Well, the first time I fought him, it was a tournament, and I had fought twice before. He fought twice before, and I fought twice before. So it was both of our third fight of the night, and He tried to take me down, and I just stopped his takedown and caught him in a guillotine choke, squeezed the dickens out of him, and he went unconscious. So that was a pretty quick fight. And then the second time, we had watched him. We had Anthony Hamlet and I. We trained pretty specific for what he was going to do. He'd always pick people up and slam them, you know, if you got in tight. So our game plan was to throw an overhand punch, try to get him to pick me up and slam me. Because when you get slammed, you know, the guy who hits the mat first gets to move first. So I had the opportunity to move and, you know, locked up the triangle, and he picked me up again. And when he picked me up again, I knew he was in big trouble because I was able to transition to the armbar, and, you know, he just made mistakes that were, you know, he's trying to power out of something that he should have used technique to get out of.
Now, I've got the fight pass, and I actually remember this one. You, after your two fights that you had against Hughes, you get your title shot against Jens Pulver, Hughes' teammate, for the lightweight title. Now, going in, from the fight pass, what I remember in that fight, you guys had animosity because you guys were high school friends, I guess.
Was that true? That was just people trying to make some drama for the fight. You know, it didn't even really exist. But they were trying to, you know, it was a brand new promotion. It was UFC's first, I think it was their second fight that they did. You know, they were trying to bump up the drama in the fight. So, yeah, I think that if you rewatch the fight, you know, and go by the scoring that they do now, I win that fight. But back then,
I saw that fight. You should have won it.
Right? I won that fight, man. But now, you know, that boxing judges that it didn't, so. Yeah. It is what it is.
When going into that fight, how'd you train for that fight? Did you train for it differently because it was a title match?
I went up to Big Bear with Tito. He was fighting, he was supposed to fight, Vitor on that fight, but then it got changed around and he ended up fighting, Vladimir Matyshenko. Mm-hmm. But it was, me, Tito, Lance Gibson, Jason Miller, Fabiano Iha, and, Rampage Jackson. We were all up in Big Bear, training for that. So we got a good training camp, and 9/11 happened right in the middle of it. So that put a damper in things. But I mean, I had a good camp for it, and it was all in all, the hardest part of the fight was making the weight. So
I believe that you said it was tough. Yeah, and I believe it. 30 pounds. I mean, weight classes. I don't know how you were able to do it. That had to be some intense shit there. Intense.
Right.
So, you returned to the UFC on December of 2009 in the Ultimate Fighter 10 finale. Tell us about this fight against John Howard. Not many people know of John Howard.
Well, John Howard was a tough kid, but like that fight, it kind of sucked because old referee guy, like I wasn't knocked unconscious. The kid knocked me down with 5 seconds to go in the fight after me. I dominated the fight the entire time. And the referee stopped it, you know, so there wasn't much I could do after that. But, you know, John, hats off to him. He held in there the whole time and was still dangerous at the last few seconds of the match.
So is this true that what I'm seeing after that fight is when you officially decided that you would go to 155?
I mean, I jumped weight classes all the time. Yeah, I was going to try 55 again and, no, but I think not after that time. I fought. I came back and I fought at 170 still against. I tried to go down to 55 again after I fought.
Ben Saunders.
No, not Ben Saunders. It was the kid with the arrow. He had the arrow chest. Brian, maybe.
Oh, I know. I can't think of the name right now. I know what you're talking about.
I wore the speedo because I lost a bet. But, like, I had a staph infection in my arm for that fight. I went out and took it back right away and put the chokehold on, and he just grabbed my arm and pulled it right off. There was no strength for that bad boy. So, I mean, the referee knew it, so he stopped the fight, like, right away. It was, he knew I was going in there with the injury, so.
Before we get back into your fights, you obviously being an athlete, of course, like many athletes I've had, I ask this question to everybody, how hard is it, especially in a sport, your sport, when you got lots of injuries because it's a physical sport, nonstop physical activity in the sport, how do you guys recover from the injuries and how much time does it usually take to recover from your injuries before a fight?
Well, back in the day when we were allowed to use testosterone, it didn't take very long because you could help your body and heal your body quicker. But when they made that illegal, it takes a long time. It depends on what injury. You know, you get torn ligaments and that kind of thing. And most of your damage happens in practice. And before I fought John Fitch, I had a I was cutting weight real good, and I shut the bathroom stall and tore my bicep. I mean, that those kind of injuries, just, you know, your body's so stressed out all the time that something little like that can cause a major injury.
So, back to the fights, you faced Ben Saunders in a welterweight bout August 7, 2010 at UFC 117. Tell us about that fight, and did you think it deserved unanimous decision?
Yeah, I mean, I dominated the fight. So, I mean, there was never a time when I was in danger or anything. So, and I got on top of him quite a few times. And I think I got two out of the three judges gave me all the rounds, and then one of the judges gave him one round. So, yeah, it was definitely a unanimous decision. That kid was tough, though. He's a big kid. He's a big kid for the weight.
Yeah, he was. He should have been a light heavyweight for sure. I think he should have been. He was huge. He was huge.
He was really big.
Yeah. Your next fight, then, you face fellow UFC veteran Carl Parisian at UFC 120 in November. That was your next fight. Tell us about that fight. And, I see you had a TKO, total knockout. He's hard to knock out. I remember most of his fights. He was quick. So tell us about that fight and going into that fight.
And Carlos, he's a tough kid. I mean, he's as tough as it get. I trained real hard for that fight. I went and trained with a bunch of judo guys, and they showed me how to stop when someone. You know, there's a couple of techniques you can do to stop people from judo tossing you. Mm. You just gotta, if you can put yourself against the fence and lean against it, put your hand in a certain spot, then they can't really throw you. So I did that to him, kind of flustered what he was doing, and Caro was going through a lot of issues, personal issues at the time. So I don't think he got the best training camp coming in. Right. So I don't think I got the best Caro, but. You know, I trained hard, and I don't think he had as good a training camp, and that was kind of how it ended up. You know, I landed good punches, and that was it for him.
And then the next year, in March of 2011, at Fight Night 24, you faced TJ Wahlberger.
I got canceled.
Yeah, you were supposed to. Okay, I see it now. You were supposed to. What happened there, and how'd you get your knee injury that caused you to get out of that fight?
In practice, that's how it always happens, man. You're training hard in practice, and you get injuries. It's just the way it rolls. Try to make it through the fight camp without getting injury, and if you can, then you get in the cage and play. But you know, I've experienced that kind of thing, you know, all through my career. It's everybody does. You know, sometimes the injuries, you can fight through them. Sometimes, you know, you gotta call General Silva, and well, that's who it was back then, and tell him that you can't make it that day.
Now, was this before or after? Because it doesn't say when. Was this before or after you knew you were going to sign when you signed another contract for four more fights?
I don't remember really. I don't know when it was particular.
Okay.
But
no problem. So then when you do finally get to fight again is August 6th of that year in 2011 at 133, Brian Ebersole. Tell us about that fight and how'd you train for that fight?
I had a good camp and everything. Then I did. The problem with that one was on Thursday, I had a real, like, my arm hurt, my right arm hurt really bad. And I went and saw the UFC doctor and, you know, told him that I was having major pain in my right arm. So he looked at it and felt any, and I was, it was tender. And he decided to shoot it full of cortisol. And it's not what you're supposed to do when somebody has a staph infection. And the next day, my arm was like, I mean, you can see it on the video, but my arm's huge. It's swollen, like super swollen. But I did the best, you know, to hide that because I couldn't afford not to fight in the fight because I had so many sponsors and so much money in sponsorship that I would have lost or missed out on. So I decided to go for the fight anyway. And I did what I could do. You know, I took him down and took his back and put the chokehold on, and literally he just grabbed my arm, peeled it, and pulled it off. Like, I had no strength to hold the choke on. So I knew I was in big trouble then. Rolled over to guard, and he landed a couple blows, but the referee knew that I already had an injury, so he just called the fight right away.
Now, feel free if you want to talk about this. You can tell me no, and then we'll drop it as this. But according to this, you lost a bet. And do you know where I'm going with this, according to what I'm seeing?
Yeah, I lost a bet with my buddy, and I had to wear the Speedo on pay-per-view. Yeah.
Yeah, you know about it. Apparently, you had a testicle hanging out, apparently, and the fans said, put on something.
There's some weird people in it that follow the internet. Like, you can watch that whole fight, you'll never see that, but, like, somebody found, like, one frame that it shows, like, a part of my ball sack falling out of the thing, which, you know, it is what it is. You know, we're fighting, and it just happens, man.
Yeah.
But somebody that has to, like, go search through a fight to try to find that's kind of,
yeah, sexual
deviance or something, man.
But it is, but that's how weird people are these days, that's for sure.
Right.
That's how they are today. So, in December, later that year, at 140, you faced John McDC. I hope I'm saying that correct. If not, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Tell us about that fight.
That fight, I cut, like, from 85, I cut, like, 36 pounds in the day before the fight, and I still missed weight by, I think I missed it by 2 pounds. So that wasn't very, like, I had to kick his ass, otherwise I was probably going to get cut. But the fight turned out good for me, like, 40 punches. I think I punched him 40-0, and, that fight kind of pissed me off, because his coach, they called me out. Like, they asked Joe Silva to, they said they wanted to fight me. So they were thinking that their guy was going to come beat me up. And I showed him that he had a little bit more work to do before he bit off that kind of fight. And it was probably my easiest UFC fight.
And then, unfortunately, I see again, also due to injury. Do you remember what injury this was? You were supposed to, your next fight, you were scheduled to face Tony Ferguson. So what injury did you have? Do you remember that fight?
That's about 10 years ago. I don't remember what it was, but I honestly don't even remember. But I think it was a neck injury that I had. I recall right. I was having problems with my neck all the time. I had to get surgery in 2007. But, I had recurring neck injury, so it might have been that.
And then you were supposed to at 151, but the event was canceled. You were supposed to Tavares. You were supposed to do that, but it was rescheduled for October of 2012 at FX5, but you come in overweight. Tell us about that fight and what happened during that fight.
I was having problems making weight. Tavares wouldn't, like, I think I was 2 pounds over, and Tavares wouldn't fight me no matter what. Like, he wouldn't take he wouldn't take the 20% or anything, which I don't blame him, because he was going to get beat up. But, he wouldn't, you know, I beat him up in practice when I trained with him at American Top Team, or not American Top Team, Team Quest, when he was down there training.
So then unfortunately, then after that, you get released by the UFC. How hard was it to get released by them, and who actually told you? Was it Dana White or the Silvas?
It was Joe Silva, but, you know, they said, hey, this is what's going to happen. And go back and win some more fights, and we'll get you back. But, I was pretty much closing to the end of my career anyway, so it was what it was.
Yeah, and then you take a couple years off, according to this, and you go to the World Series of Fighting, and you fight John Fitch. Tell us about that fight.
That was the fight that was another fight I fought injured. I had the night before the fight. John, I was a replacement for a replacement. I think I was a third replacement for that fight. John couldn't get any opponents, and I took the fight pretty close, pretty short notice. And I was in the weight cut, and I went and used the bathroom, and I pushed the bathroom stall open with my right arm, and it tore my bicep. My bicep just rolled up in my arm. And I told him I would take the. I told him what would happen. I said, I'm not gonna finish cutting weight, bro. But I'll still fight you, you know, because I didn't want to ruin their event. So I fought him with a torn bicep, and you know, he just. It's kind of like a lackluster fight. He just took me down and would hold, and you know, do the Fitch thing.
Yeah, you do the usual Fitch. Yep, yep. That's how he always wins. That one fight you had, then you go to Pro Fighting Championship and you face Russian champion and former Bellator fighter Mikhail Sarov. Tell us about that fight.
I don't remember what that fight was, but I don't even remember what the fight was, but what it was like. I know that. Something weird happened, but it was a good fight. It was something weird happened, and then I got stopped for that fight, I think, and then I don't even remember what the issue was about it. It's so long ago, man. There's so many fights, it's hard to remember each one of them has.
So many, yeah, you've had 75 in your career, and that's a lot. I mean, that's a lot for your profession. It really is. Yeah, now that's all your fights, so now I got to ask you, you had an overall record. You had an overall record. Whoops. Hold on. 53 wins.
Right, that record thing's wrong a little.
You think
I was fighting before they had those. I probably have like 15 more wins and one more loss on that. That's not on the record.
Right.
But
according to I'm going by what this is saying for now. What this stats they have, you had 53 wins. You had a total 76. Sorry, like you said, you had more wins and all that. But do you think overall you had a successful career?
I think I had a good solid career.
Now, did you ultimately want to retire yourself? Because I see, or did this, you have psoriatic disease? Did that play a part in you retiring as well, or did you just want to retire?
I have celiac disease, which means you can't, like, you're allergic to gluten, and it screws up my hormones. So it makes it kind of hard for me to, like, makes my cardio, like, pretty difficult to keep good cardio. And I'm supposed to be on supplemental testosterone because my body doesn't produce its own due to the lack of micronutrients that the celiac causes. And so that, you know, you can't, if you're on supplemental testosterone, you're not supposed to be able to fight anymore. But, like, I'm supposed to be on it for, like, you can tell that I'm not, like, a juiced out guy, but I'm supposed to be on that just for my health. So that kind of makes it so you can't fight in the upper organizations. So it's kind of like, you know, stick to my health or continue to fight. And it's, I choose my health over that.
Right. So. Now, ultimately, of course, since you were in UFC, you got to be around Dana White. I've had a couple UFC fighters on here that have also been around him as well. Tell us about Dana White. What was he like, or did you not really get to speak to him in person?
I've talked to Dana plenty of times. He's a good person, man. He's a good guy, and you know, if you're trying to do business against him, compete in business, and he's a cutthroat guy. But as a personal, on a personal level, he's a great person. You know, he's a good guy that tries to help everybody that he can, and he's a nice guy.
Now, upcoming fights. Is there any upcoming fights that you would like to see or pay attention to, that you want to get our viewers attached to, that want to tune in to the pay-per-view that I believe that's coming up within the next couple of weeks?
I mean, I like watching that guy, that Khamzat guy fight, and I think he'll beat up that the guy who just beat Izzy. I think if he gets to fight that guy, he'll beat that guy up, and then I don't think Izzy will beat Khamzat either. So I think that guy, if he fights at 185, I think if he fights at 170, he'll have a harder time. Just because he has to cut a lot of weight, and then he's got guy. I don't think he can beat what the hell is that kid's name? I don't think he can beat either the champ, the former champ, Taro, or the kid that Colby. I don't think he can beat either of those guys, but I think he could beat most of the guys at 185.
Now, during your career, did you have any grudges with any fighters at all during your career?
I might have a little grudge with Frank Trigg. The first time he kicked me in the balls, second time I fought him, he stopped me when I was rolling for a heel hook, and then I had a chance to compete against him in Abu Dhabi, and I tore his knee before his fight against GSP. So he kind of had an injury going into that fight because I yanked on it a little hard for him at Abu Dhabi. But that was pretty much the only rival I had.
Do you guys talk today? Or are you guys like do you respect each other now?
Yeah, we get along. We get along fine. Yeah, we get along just fine. We've talked and stuff. He's a good person. Just an honorary fighter.
Now, you said you were at you said you've been to a couple camps. Obviously, the Victory Athletics was one of them, and you said you were at American Top Team when you trained there, and you were at Team Quest. Was there one specific camp that
you cut out here on the live stream?
Huh? Say that again. Did I lose you?
Yeah, you lost me. You there now?
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yeah, but I got you.
Okay, perfect. Can you hear me perfect or no?
Yes, I can hear you good.
Perfect. Okay. So like I was saying, you were a part of Victory Athletics. You said you were also at American Top Team and you were at Team Quest. Is there one specific gym that you really enjoyed the most training at? Because all three of those are different. So was there one that you enjoyed the most training at?
I mean, they're all really the same. Like, I got along with all the guys at American Top Team. My gym was Victory Athletics, and then Team Quest, I helped coach there and trained there as well. And I like them all the same. Like, they're all good places. It's just, different types of my career that were they were beneficial for me to be where I was at that time. So, but they're all fantastic places to be. The old Team Quest is kind of the one that built all the tough fighters. That Team Quest is gone, but it was a good place and probably one of the best places to be in the world.
So now I got to ask you. I know you follow it because everybody does. The Paul brothers. What do you think of them? And especially, I think it's Jake that's fighting former MMA fighters. What's your take on that? Do you respect the fact how he's trying to get big, or do you think he should face people that aren't really retired? What's your take on that?
I take it as he's a smart businessman. Like, he's making good money and he's building his record the way he wants to. I think he is smart and he's doing a job and he's a good boxer. Like, he doesn't suck or anything. So, I mean, what can you can't really complain about what the guy's doing, because he's undefeated still and he's made a bunch of money. So I think he's doing what he's supposed to be doing.
Yeah, I'd have to agree with you. I would just like to see him fight though somebody. I mean, I get you want to make all the money in the world that you want, and you're training. I get he's training hard, and I really do. But I would think you would want to set you up for a tougher opponent, though. Wouldn't you think, though, to actually see if you actually belong?
Well, he can't. He's not gonna. He'll get beat up if he fights a really skilled boxer, because, you know, those guys that are the highly skilled boxers, they've been boxing since they were, you know, 10, 11 years old, and they're just gonna go in there and you know, stay away from his power and box him the whole time and score a decision win. You know, but I think the kid has good power. Like, he can knock out anybody. So if anybody gets in there with him, you know, he has the ability to knock him out, whether it's a high level boxer or not. But if I was a coach coaching against him, and, you know, he makes a lot of mistakes in the actual, you know, regular boxing. So if I was coaching my guy, and I would have him just, you know, stay away from the guy, stay away from Paul, and box him on the outside and take the decision.
So, besides the two Hughes fights that you had, is there one fight in your career in either promotion, UFC, whatever promotion you've been in, is there one fight that stands out to you the most?
I fought Drew Fickett, that guy. I mean, we had a really good fight. I lost a split decision, but I should have won. But that was a good fight. It was you know, him and I became real good friends. I was best man at his wedding. So he was, that was a good fight. Cause, you know, you build good friendships from this sport. And that fight was a tough one for me. But another tough fight that I had that was good was that Buck Greer, this kid that we fought. He kind of retired after we fought, but that fight was stands out to me because right after the fight, after our fight, there was like a big riot, and cops came there with M16s and like shot up, got a gunfight with bikers and stuff. Geez. Pretty crazy. Yeah, if you look it up, it was like down in Palm Springs. It was Ultimate Athlete. It was the name of the event, but. That one sticks out because it was just a crazy thing to happen at a fight.
Yeah, I'll say, damn. Now I got to get into a little bit of UFC history here. There's been quite a bit of good fights, but I do got to ask you, is there one personally, I know there might be too many for you to say, but off the top of your head, is there one UFC fight that you witnessed or watched that you could say is the greatest UFC fight that you've ever seen?
I don't know. There's so many, like you said. I don't know if I could really pinpoint one where I would say. And it was the greatest I've ever seen. Yeah, I don't know if I could do that. I mean, I like a lot of fights that I like this. I mean, I thought that Johnny Hendricks beat GSP when they gave GSP the win.
Yeah, that was a good one.
That was a pretty good fight, but yeah, I don't really know. I can't really say that some one was any better than the other. You know, they were all good fights.
Now, ultimately, I grew up with the sport of the legends. Like Randy Couture, all of them, like you, Chuck Liddell, Tito, all of them. I haven't really watched, I mean, I'm trying to get into it. I haven't really watched much of the fighters of today. What fighters really stand out today that I should be watching? Like, that come comparison to the guys of the old.
I think Justin Gaethje's a good fighter. If he ever got himself a ground game where he learned how to not get choked out, then he's a stud. I like how he fights. I'm that guy. He's interesting. I'm exciting. I can't even think of the names. I like that Colby Covington. I like how he fights. He's a tough kid. Those guys are all ones that I like to watch. I like that kid, he 5-pounder, beat Frankie Edgar, he's from California, can't remember his name off the top of my head either, good, you ditch a kid? I don't remember his name, but he's good too. Obviously, you know, all those other guys, like, they come in there, like, Connor and those guys. I can't even think of any of their names. You got me. I don't even follow the sport enough to know everyone's name good like I used to. Funny. That Moreno kid's pretty good too. I like him. That 35 pounder or 25 pounder, I mean, right?
Now, if offered, would you want to be a broadcaster or a coach?
I coach, you know. I coach. But I coached the whole of the down in India. I went down there and coached a whole group of fighters for the Super Fight League. I was their head technique coach. I'd get those guys ready for the Super Fight League events over in India. I spent a lot of time coaching. That's definitely something I enjoy doing.
Well, you wouldn't ever give announcing a try. You don't think you'd be good at that?
Is that what you said, announcing?
Yeah. You think you'd be good at that?
Commentating? Yeah. I mean, I know what I'm at, so I would commentate some if somebody asked me to.
There you go.
I know what I'm looking at, so it'd be something I could do.
Yeah. So before we conclude here, a couple more. I asked this one. I'll start off with the last one. I actually ask everybody this. Since you did coach a little bit, like you said, what would you tell your students to want to be at your level and get to the ultimate goal of wherever they want to go, of UFC, Pride, not Pride, no board, but one, whatever, PFL, whatever organization's out there, what would you tell them to get to that level?
Train cardio. You know, everybody can get to the level. It's really about being confident in what you can do, and having good cardio is a big deal for fighting. If you believe in yourself, you can do anything. You know, you can go wherever, as far as you want to go. It's really about putting the time in, you know, making it to practice every day, and believing that, setting a goal and not letting anything stand in your way.
I couldn't agree more with that one. And my final one to you is, now, how did you have to hype up your fights when you were going and you were fighting? How did you have to hype up your fights to promote them? What did you have to do?
Really, we just, that was something I wasn't really, I just went out there and fought. As far as hyping it up and being the show that they do now, I guess I talk a little trash, but I really don't like the trash either. So maybe I probably wasn't the best guy for promoting fights, because I'm more old fashioned. I like to go in there and just do what you gotta do, and
yeah,
let your performance show for it. It'll show for itself.
I don't blame you on that one either. That's how I would be if I was a fighter. I'm not good promoting or nothing. I'd be like you. I can't promote myself, nothing. And I would just stick to my game and go out there and fight. I could not do what they asked for today. I really could not. I could not do that.
Colby Covington does a good job, because he, you know, he found himself a niche and you know, kind of followed in the footsteps of Chael, because Chael's always a good fighter, but he couldn't make it, you know, get noticed until he started talking trash about Frank Shamrock, and then nobody remembers that. But he was the same thing he did to what's that guy that he fought for the title? Obviously, when you talk trash to Anderson Silva all the time, people don't know that, but he used to do that to Frank Shamrock for years.
Yeah.
Frank would just pretend like he didn't know him. No, but then once Frank was no longer the guy, the man, and Chael started doing it to him. And I don't have that kind of stuff in me, but it's entertaining for sure. That's kind of what you have to do, is you pick a persona and talk as much trash as you can, and hopefully you can back it up in the cage.
Now, do you think do you think Frank ultimately retired early? Do you think he ultimately retired early?
Circular, side to side, up and down. I mean, Frank was, you know, talented, but he wasn't as talented as he thought he was. He, he went to Spec Wars and got his ass kicked against Nick, you know, just because he, you know, he was definitely the generation before, you know. Everybody got too good for him too quick, so he probably retired at the right time. Because he wouldn't have the allure that he does still.
I agree. I didn't follow him after because he didn't really, I didn't know he was still fighting. I thought he honestly retired, but I guess, like you said, he went back. But obviously it wasn't good enough to return, because there was talk that he wanted to go back to UFC. I do remember that when he was announcing for UFC, but I guess that never went about because, like you said, I guess he got his ass kicked. So I didn't know about that, right? So now the last one before I let you go is the rivalries that have been. I know you know, we all know them, the Tito Shamrock Tito Liddell, Couture Liddell, all them rivalries. Do you think that ultimately helped grow the sport to what it is today with rivalries like that? Even though they, like you said, you all respect each other at the end of the day, which is awesome. But do you think it's rivalries like that what makes the sport how good it is for fans to watch it?
Yeah, definitely. You know, a lot of those were fabricated rivalries, but I mean, people like to. They need to have that WWE allure, you know, mixed in with mixed martial arts. Otherwise, people won't follow it. So as long as they keep a little bit of storyline in there and keep the fights real, but you know, you can have a little bit of fabricated storyline, then the fans will stay entertained and you know, they can get behind it.
I couldn't have agreed with you more. I appreciate your time. Thank you again. Do you want a copy, and I'll send it to you when we're done? Do you want a copy of the episode?
That'd be great.
Perfect. All right. I thank you. And hey, if you can, help me out. If you're still in contact with any other fighters, please send them my way on Twitter. You got my Twitter, so send them my way.
Yeah, I'll do that.
Perfect. I appreciate it again. Thank you for your time. It was fun. I will send you the episode.
Cool. Have a good one, man.
You too. Take care. All right, Dennis Hallman, everybody. This concludes episode number 108. Very good conversation with him. Just like me, not very outspoken, so hey, I just have shared something in common. Hope the episode didn't sound bad, but hey, could have been. But this concludes episode 108 with Dennis Hallman. It was fun. I had fun. I had a blast. I hope he did as well. But yeah, to conclude off, I got to thank Podcast One and definitely betonline.net. Go on, use the code Podcast1 to get 50% off on your bets. I don't do it personally because I know I would lose. But for those of you out there, UFC is going strong. MLB will be starting next year. That's coming up soon. You got, so yeah. Thank you again to them, and let's get going. Get your bets out. I appreciate it, and thank you again, guys. Have a good night.
Huh? God damn. What the fuck do you want me to do? Kill you?